Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. My name is Steve Lippman. I am joined, as always, by Emily Cannell and Dan Fulpone. I have questions for each of you. My first question is for Emily. You were at a game day thing today, watching the Eagles. What is your favorite game day snack?
Oh, so this is what I brought to the tailgate. It was like at a house, but the party today. I am a huge fan of French onion dip for chips, like just the kind you buy at the store, like the Hell of a Good brand or the Lay's brand, but Hell of a Good is better. Like the French onion dip with the Ruffles chips, that is my favorite thing to eat, and I ate a lot of it today. So great. that's my choice.
Have you ever made your own?
No, but I should try.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd do great. Dan, question for you. What do you do to keep your hair so nice and fluffy and beautiful? What do you do? What's your regimen?
Well, thanks, Steve. Very nice.
You got it.
I don't know. I shower. I don't know. I have kind of poofy hair. It's just like that.
Have you heard of people who say, like, never wash your hair, never put shampoo in your hair and don't shower?
I wash my hair every day.
What's going on? Me too.
It sounds gross.
Emily,
I wash my hair once a week.
Now, yes, I do know that for women, they wash it less frequently. And there's something with that. But
I think
what
it's just
the
people with longer hair, not just like, because I think it's like, because women usually have longer hair, like on average. And it's like, doesn't it like, it's like bad for it if you wash it too many times. And like, since it's longer and then you wash it more before you cut that piece of it and it just gets gross. That's my understanding from Andrea.
I'm not really sure, but I just have like really thick curly hair that doesn't get like greasy or gross very easily. So I just tend to not wash it until it looks gross. And I think like washing it a lot, like strips it of its natural oils, I think is something
that
you're supposed
say.
To
yeah.
not do. So I'm like, if it looks fine, I mean, I wear it in a bun every day of my life. So if it doesn't look disgusting, I just ride with it. If I Peloton, I'll wash it, but I haven't been doing that very often.
Subtle flex that you have a Peloton. All right. We are moving on here.
That was good.
I
like it.
Stay tuned later for the story of what happened when Emily and Jordy went to Bark in the Park at the Phillies game. So that's what we call in the biz, a tease. We need to talk about Ben Simmons. Basically nothing has happened. And you know, if you're at home listening to this thinking, boy, I wish they would shut the fuck up about this. So do we. We don't want to talk about it either. But we do this podcast now twice a week in the off season, and this giant thing hasn't happened yet.
I love that we went to two times a week in the off season when nothing is happening. We're like, we need more episodes.
Yeah.
Let's go.
We were like, yeah.
We need to talk about Ben Simmons. Basically nothing has happened is the most our podcast thing that has ever been said.
Well, listen, we're happy that you're here with us. The first thing that we'll talk about is the first of two Brian Windhorst. And listen to us aggregating him, but the first of two Brian Windhorst. No. The first of two Brian Windhorst things. The first was that he was on ESPN and he said one of the messages Ben has sent back towards Philly is that it's not his job to fix his trade value. Now, I understand that. That is certainly true. It's never any player's job to like hope that Sixers or the team that's trading them get a better pick or like get a better package for them. They don't give a shit about any of that. But in a way, he's saying it's not Ben's job to be good and be worth a lot of things in a trade. So I thought that was like a funny funny thing that happened. Dan, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, like I kind of understand in some way, right? Like, sure, Ben's gonna be traded. Obviously, he's gonna root for, maybe not. So I don't know. There could be some pride aspect to it where it's like, I hope they want to give up a lot to get me. Like, I hope my value is high and I'm like, respected around the league. But I think from like a strategic standpoint, you want the team you're going to spend less, so they like have more to put around you. And it's just a good deal for your new organization, and I guess a bad one for the one that you hate and are leaving. But that said, it definitely, like anything that is said right now is just not going to come off well. Like,
unwinnable. Yeah.
But I understand that they're like playing some game with, you know, the Sixers and trying to get them to move him. And like, I understand all that, but like, just from looking at it, like if you're a fan who just watched this implosion and you hear something like that, like I can see why it's annoying. Like, I'm not annoyed by it because I'm annoyed by other things, and that's just like way too far down, and I don't really care. And I somewhat understand what they mean. I also think there's like an off-court aspect to it, which is like the Sixers don't want to trade Ben until his value is higher. So like, maybe he doesn't even have to play to raise it, but just like they don't want, they, whatever the market is now, they clearly want more. Mm-hmm. And you have like the leaks coming, which are like, you know, Ben won't play this and that, which are, you know, I don't know, that you can argue about whether that's affecting his trade value. The fact that he's not showing up is definitely lowering it if he doesn't show up. So like in that sense, it kind of literally is his job to show up, and that's not raising his, like that's lowering his trade value. So in that sense, in a roundabout way, it kind of is his job, literally, to raise his value from where it is, because by not doing his job,
if that's
not
right,
reporting,
if that's,
so that's the other side of it. But I'm just like, whatever.
I think first of all, the thing that you said about like a player not wanting to like eviscerate the team that he's going to, not wanting them to trade a million things so that when they get there, there's nothing. That's like famously, I think, the Melo thing where everybody knew he wanted to go to New York, but New York still had to trade everything for him at the deadline prior to him being a free agent. So when he went there, they had like gutted the team. And what else had you said that I thought about? Who knows? It's gone. Emily, what do you think about this?
I agree with everything that you guys said. And I think just like based on the things we've heard from Ben, like my first instinct is him being like, it's not my job to make me be better. Like, that's just like what it sounds like.
I know.
And that is just his MO. It's what we've been talking about in circles for months now, but like, I can't stop. Like, I was driving home tonight and I was at a red light and I looked at Jordy and I said, Ben Simmons is a loser. And that's just, it just pops into my head randomly throughout the day. And I feel the need to say it out loud because he doesn't have any desire. I mean, I don't know him. I'm just speaking, but like, it doesn't seem to me that he has any desire to be great. He has the God given, whatever you believe in, given ability and great things that we are not blessed to have, the height and the athleticism. And he just doesn't seem to care enough to make the best out of it. And it's extremely frustrating, and he doesn't see anything wrong with that. And I would like him to be gone.
I remembered what I was going to say. Thank God. How much this is about to add. What was I going to say?
You forget again?
Oh my God, Steve.
Oh, the leaks. Okay, so yeah, Dan, you talked about his value possibly going down with a holdout. Like, for me, when they went public with the report that Keith had about, like, he's not coming, and, like, all of the ones that have come out since, it's just like, they just want him out of Philadelphia. Like, they are literally, they don't care. Like, whatever it takes, like, get him off the team. He's never going to play for them again. And like, I don't think they care about the value of it. And I think that they are going to make this uglier and uglier, especially as training camp gets close, which is in a few weeks now. So I just think that it's only going to get worse from here. And I certainly don't think he's going to back down and show up. One of the reports from last week Derek Bodner had from The Athletic had listed Cleveland as like a dark horse potential team. Kevin O'Connor backed that up. And then Mark Stein, he has a Substack. He wrote also that that Cleveland is interested and they're trying to remain in the fray to get Ben. And a reporter from Cleveland named Evan Damarel had a report that Ben would be open to playing in Cleveland because he'd be the best player. Awesome. And
loser he mentality.
Likes, he likes Darius Garland. They're both clutch guys. What do we think about Cleveland as a potential suitor? I wrote about it last week for Liberty Ballers. Colin Sexton is good and he's young, but they would need, I think, a lot of like draft assets probably to make that work. And to make the money work, you would need either Ricky Rubio or Kevin Love, who I'm sure the Sixers wouldn't take on his contract. Emily, what do you think about Cleveland as a as an option for Ben?
I mean, he can go to Cleveland and just be in there because I think he would hate it there. And I think that would be funny. But I think, and going off of the podcast that you guys did on Wednesday, I think that that's just like one of another team. I think it's going to have to be a three team situation. I don't know that it's going to be like a Cleveland and Philly thing. So however it shakes out is fine. But if Cleveland, I mean, if Ben wants to go hang out in the Midwest in Cleveland, sure, go ahead. No offense to Cleveland, but
Dan, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, as a trade spot, I kind of agree. They have some interesting stuff. I don't disagree that there might need to be a third team. It's weird because I mean, and we just talked to John Krasinski about this. The Sixers obviously, and everyone knows this, want to trade for star. There is not a star available. And the options seem to be trade Ben now or hold him and risk, you know, the mess that could be to wait until a star is available. I think, you know, Cleveland is a spot that makes sense for something we've talked about a lot, which is get the assets you can now. Get guys who will play for your team now. I mean, if Ben is literally holding out, it's even better in the short term to get these guys. It would have to be a three-team deal if you're trading Ben for like Lillard anyway, because Portland's going to be in rebuild mode. Make sure Portland likes Sexton and Cleveland and go get that. And Sexton can play in the meantime. And you're still in position to get that star. There's no reason in the short term or long term to just have Ben sitting around. So sure, Cleveland is interesting. And if it's Sexton and picks and if the right deal is there and do it. Why not?
Yeah. The next thing that happened is on our network, on Liberty Ballers, Jazz Kang had Brian Windhorst on his show, and they talked about the state of the Ben stuff. I wanted to just talk about the takeaways that we had from that. Emily, we can loop this in with what you had mentioned. In the podcast, Jazz asked Brian about Doc's comments from the end of the year about, and Brian talked about, you know, Doc Rivers, all the lengths that he went to defend Ben in the media, which we've talked about 100 times. And Doc, of course, after the year said, they asked him if he can be the point guard and championship team. And Doc said, I don't know the answer to that right now. Doc, I do. That's neither here nor there. Then Windhorst said that basically, that had nothing, that Doc saying that, a lot of people thought that that like depressed Ben's value in some way, that Doc saying something like that publicly affected his value in any way. And Windhorst said that's not the case. Windhorst said that his value didn't change whatsoever with what Doc said. Windhorst also said in this podcast that he thinks a big part of this is that Ben never wants to play in front of Philadelphia fans again. But Emily, you had something that I think you wanted to mention. So give me your takeaway on the Windhorst stuff with Jazz. And what you have to say about Doc's quote at the end of the year.
Well, just in regard to Doc's quote, and I agree, I never, not that I have insider knowledge, but I never thought that the quotes that Doc said were something that was affecting Ben's value. If anything, I think that Ben's reaction to those quotes is what's affecting Ben's value, but that's not Ben's problem to handle it the correct way. So that is what it is. But I just think that when I heard those quotes, like after game 7, I was miserable.
We were talking when they came out. Yeah, we were doing the podcast. Yeah.
And I was like, I wasn't like bent out of shape about it. Like, granted, I was mad at Ben too, but I didn't think it was that bad. Like, he didn't say like Ben is the worst player ever. Also, like, there's an argument to be made that Ben Simmons is not a point guard, period. So, like, sure. Once again, like, I mean, we're starting in those games, like Furkan, who's a guard, Seth, who's a guard, Ben, who's a point guard, and then we have one forward and one center. Like, that's not really like how a basketball lineup is made. You can go on about positionless basketball, but like, there's an argument to be made that Ben Simmons isn't a point guard. And now I feel like the narrative has really shifted to like, Doc Rivers has said this terrible thing about Ben Simmons,
yeah,
that is Ben is so hurt by. And I think Keith was on the radio after his report came out saying like, Ben is upset that no one reprimanded Doc for saying
that. I have that,
like,
quote.
Grown up man who is the coach of a basketball team, and he does not need to apologize to Ben Simmons for saying something a little harsh in the media. Like, I'm sorry. I've heard coaches say a lot harsher things about the players on their team, and he doesn't need to be reprimanded by like, what, like Elton Brand is going to come in and be like, Doc, you got to be nicer to Ben. Like, come on. It was ridiculous over this like one tiny baby quote. And it's become this whole thing that like Doc is mean and Ben is just like the victim in this situation. And I don't know who's spinning this narrative, but even like when we talked to your own, he like kind of said stuff like, you know, like Doc said this thing and he really like threw Ben under the bus. And I don't see it that way. I think he was frustrated, you know, as any coach would be, especially a coach like Doc who's lost a ton of game sevens. He thought maybe this was his time to get over the hump, and instead they lost to the Hawks. But I just think it's been like the narrative has really flipped on it. I don't know who is doing the flipping, if it's, you know, Rich Paul in the background, or it's just the media trying to find something else to write about. But it's been really interesting to me how this like one quote has become this focal point when I don't even think it's that big of a deal.
I totally agree. I think, here, let me read. Keith gave this quote to 97.5 The Fanatic. There are teams that are interested in Ben Simmons. They just don't want to pay the steep price. Ben Simmons knows that. So they are saying, why should we help the 76ers out when they feel like Doc Rivers said what he said, nobody apologized, and Doc was never reprimanded? This is like, we've lost the reality on this quote. Like, clearly, I don't think it did anything to his value. Windhorst doesn't think that either. What it definitely did was piss off Ben. Like, that quote really, really got under his skin. My guess is that maybe Ben and his people are thinking like, wow, like after this series, he just completely flips and now thinks that I'm not a, like, I don't know. Now, the other angle to this is like, if you're Doc, just lie. Just lie. Like, the season's over. You don't lose anything by just saying, yeah, he's a championship guy. He's great. I love him. Like, you don't lose anything. But I also think that we can also be adults and like allow Doc to like not even fully vent some frustration. Obviously, I feel like we need to mention Doc was not very good in this series either. But like, it seemed like the most benign quote to be like called this like scarlet letter that is now following the franchise. Like, I think you're right that it is way overrated in its like the people used to say shit way, 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 way worse than this. And like, you know, this would not crack like the top 500 of like head coaches talking about their players. So yeah, it clearly pissed off Ben. All of this is a means to an end to get him out of Philly. So I'm glad he said it. Dan, what do you think about the Doc quote at this point and what Windhorst had to say to Jazz?
Yeah, I mean, so one thing that Windy kept kind of suggesting was that in some way, because Ben was being like scapegoated, like Ben was like an easy scapegoat because of this pass that he made. And I just feel the need to say that that is like detached from reality, because people were furious at Ben way before game seven. Early in the series, he didn't take a shot in the fourth quarter of, I think, game four, five, six, and seven. So like, this wasn't a game seven thing. He shot like 36% from the foul line. Like, he barely made a third of his foul shots. He got taken off the court multiple times in that series because he couldn't make a foul shot. He didn't want to look at the rim, not just on that possession, the whole series. This is not scapegoating from one play where he's like the easy target here. If you remember after game five, which we were at and miserable about, that morning you wake up to, from the local beat writers, you have Kyle Newbeck wrote probably the biggest criticism of Ben that I could remember to date up until, and people have been, you know, critical of Ben, but this is, you know, there was no, you know, yes, the team collapsed, but like it was, these are local reporters who are watching the game, who we respect, who talk about basketball, who we like to listen to and read talking about basketball, who are putting this on Ben games before that pass. And you have, you know, Bodner and Hoffman on their Sixers Beat podcast doing the same thing. This is all predating that pass by a lot of minutes in the basketball, in the series, in the basketball games in the series. I don't know. I'm really tired. It's late. You record
in the basketball.
In the basketball. We record late now. But I will say, you know, while Doc probably did piss off Ben, I just don't buy that there's like some on-court reason that Ben wants out. He might be pissed at Doc as a person. I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, usage. I mean, he's open to going to 29 other teams. He's clearly not super concerned about fit or anything like that. And I do think it's true that, because we've talked about this a lot, right? Like, fans were supportive of Ben. When Ben was missing those foul shots, he was getting cheered when he made one. Like, it was ridiculous. It was embarrassing. We've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
I also think he's disliked in the city. And I think those are separate things, right? Like, I think I'm a good example. I was there. I cheered when he made foul shots. I didn't boo him when he missed them until we blew the 26-point lead, and then I booed. I think I was very supportive of Ben. Everyone knows I don't really like Ben. So I think those are two different things that can both be true, which is that he was supported and he's not really liked. And I think at this point, you will still find people who like him, but most of those people are on Twitter. And of just the average people who watch the Sixers and don't send 50 tweets a day, I think that Ben is probably disliked by like 90% of Sixers fans in and around the city.
Especially now after the trade demand is public. Yes.
If you listen to local sports radio, which, you know, I see comments from people who, you know, and I understand it, right? Like, I get not liking local sports radio, like whatever, you don't have to like it, but whether you like it or not, it's huge here. It just is. A lot of people listen to it. A lot of people like these people and agree with them. This is a huge percentage of local sports fans. And they're representing how people feel. Whether they mean it or not, they're basically for a living talking about what they think people feel. And you hear callers calling in, they don't like that. Like, you talk, have random conversations with people who will complain about Ben if you bring up the Sixers. He is not very well liked here, especially now, especially after the trade request. And I understand it. Like, he wants out. And I think that, like, Windhorst said it, you know, he's a big reason he wants out is because he doesn't want to play in front of those fans. I kind of get it. I don't think his reception would be super warm. So
It would be an absolute nightmare.
Even before the trade request, he was going to be booed on the opening night. On the home opener, before he asked out, he was going to be booed on opening night because that series was a disaster. I think that this is, in general, a fan base that likes accountability. You could argue that he's not the only person who lacks accountability, but we said it, you know, very early in the offseason, not even offseason, like there were still playoff games being played. We would joke, oh, still no, like, end of season Instagram post from Ben. You know, you had the Tobias and Embiid, we need to be better. You got that from everyone, nothing from Ben, right? Like, I don't think there's any sense around here that Ben is, I mean, you heard Emily earlier. Like, Emily, do you feel like Ben is like upset about how the series went in a way that his teammates are? Or do you feel like he is like upset at himself for how he played? I don't think that there's a sense around here from people who are following the team that he feels that way. And
I don't think that he thinks he did anything wrong. I think that he does everything he needs to do and he doesn't need to get better. And that, so like, everyone else can fix things around him because he's not the problem.
But the thing, and that's how I think, like, he feels. If you just growing up, going to games here and rooting for these teams and listening to radio and talking to people for here, like all my friends are from here. Like, you guys, same way, right? Like, when an athlete plays poorly, people around here want them to say they're going to get better and then get better, not say I'm actually really good at some other things and never change their game. That's just like, that's like, I feel like this, you know, the fan base gets labeled as like, oh, they like, you know, hard no, like whatever. No, I think a big thing is like, they just want people to like take accountability to show that
give a shit,
putting work in something and to care like we care. And I don't think it's just now. I think in general, there hasn't been a big sense that Ben really cares. And I'm not saying he doesn't care. Like, I don't know him. I'm not trying to say like, I know what Ben is thinking. I don't. I'm just saying that he, according to Windhorst, wants out because he doesn't want to play in front of these fans. And a big reason that fans are super unhappy with him is that they feel, right or not, I think you could argue rightly, that he is not accountable and that he doesn't feel bad, that he doesn't seem to care about, you know, the, like, what's going on, the outcome. And I'm sure he does in some way that he doesn't show. I think he's very introverted and, I think in general is, you know, Windhorst said it, you know, with Doc's comments about him throughout the season, not at the end, just randomly hyping up Ben for like 10 minutes for no reason. There's a sense that, you know, he didn't use the word ego, but he did use the word fragile, you know. Mm-hmm. Windhorst basically saying that, you know, Doc knew that how fragile Ben was at the time, I think is almost an exact quote. And so that kind of guy, even if he's kicking himself and saying, I need to make my foul shots, I need to be able to shoot, I need to get better, he's not going to say that publicly. And maybe he's, you know, on the inside saying, you know, I still did a lot, it's not getting talked about. That seems to be the kind of guy he is. I mean, just, you know, reading off of his own words from Windhorst's comments, right? So I don't think that meshes super well with here. I think that is that lack of outward accountability, that lack of, I need to be better saying those words. I don't think that goes over very well here. I think it's a big reason that he is disliked. Like, don't get it wrong. It is not 50-50, like Twitter might make you think. He is generally by most people disliked, not on like a personal level, but as a player, he is disliked around here. That is just true. I mean, I haven't interviewed everyone in the city, but I know enough people.
You haven't.
I know enough people that the percentage is very high. So that's just the truth. And I can't really blame Ben for wanting out, because I think that if you don't talk to people around here and listen to the radio, and if you don't live around here, you kind of miss it, because on the internet, it does seem kind of split, and it is not. It just isn't. And I can't really blame Ben for wanting out for that.
Did you guys see the all the Charles Barkley Shaq stuff this week? Yeah. Too?
Yeah.
I mean, they're all basically saying what Dan just said. And I know you can say like they do the whole like, well, when I was a player, blah, blah, blah thing. But like, it's a lot of like, this is a town that you can't, you know, you can't not work hard and come in and play and then go to LA in the summer and post pictures of your pool constantly and have people be like, that's fine. That's what I want to see. You know, yeah, it's
that's just a big part of the fan thing too. You know,
it is. I mean, it's just, this is an opinion. This isn't an opinion of me saying Ben doesn't care, he's lazy. This is not me. This is how, in general, the casual Sixers fan feels around here.
And,
it's how he's talked about in sports media and in the radio. I mean, the sense that he's not doing the right work, that he is not willing to go outside of his comfort zone, has been written about extensively by local beat writers, right? Like, these are not things that I'm conjecturing. I'm not even asserting them. This is just factually how he is talked about. And I understand why he wants out. And again, I get why he wants out. I will not follow the narrative that he was not supported, though, because he was cheered and cheered and cheered as he messed up. And every little success among all the mess ups throughout that series, he was cheered. And you can go back and you can watch the games, and he was. And so those are two different things. And I understand Ben's angle to it, but it's not like we're just out to get him, because he was beloved his rookie year. I thought Ben was going to be phenomenal. I was one of the people, you know, I was arguing with the Jazz fans about Mitchell. I was arguing with the Celtics fans about Tatum. We had Ben was going to be the best, right? No one wanted this. Nobody wanted this. No one wanted to hate on the guy.
The other narrative that I've seen coming out a little bit is like that this is recency bias because of one bad series. And I just would, first of all, I disagree with that. But second of all, like one bad series is a player like missing a bunch of shots. Like sometimes, like you're a great player who misses a ton of shots, and that happens. But like
Paul George had a bad series.
Right. Like he was petrified. Like I don't mean to like armchair psychologist, but like clearly did not want the basketball at all. And in a larger sense, he ran into the exact same issues that he does every single year and for every single year since he was drafted. So none of this is new, and none of it is really like left up to chance. Like all of it, what else would be the outcome? That he becomes a good half court initiator in the playoffs against a team that matters? Like, you know, so I think that to say that it was like recency bias or reactionary because of one series is like not true, when it really was the culmination. And people talk about the pass, and like that play in and of itself should have been 2 points. Instead it was 1 point because he passed it to Thibault. Thibault missed the free throw. But it certainly was a momentum issue in the arena, you know, while they're home, but also like it was indicative of this entire thing, you know? So no, the pass itself, if people are overrating that and that play itself and its impact, like I would say that that's wrong. But to use it as a metaphor for like what's been going on, I think that is totally fair. Well, Dan, you had a disappointment thing. Did you want to do that?
Yeah, we can. But real quick, I just want to say, like what you just said, like Ben averaged a career low in points, assists, and rebounds this year.
Yeah.
Ben in his career has not scored well, especially in the second round of the playoffs. Right. Yeah. In the playoffs, especially in the second round of the playoffs. Right. There is I did a T-test. It is statistically significant. He is scoring less in the playoffs. Right. It is it's just true. And I think that, you know, on one hand, it's easy to say, oh, well, he's young, lots of young players struggle in the playoffs at first, they figure it out. I think that this is different because he's unique. He's weird. His weaknesses are unique. And it's not like he's just kind of struggling or like the guy who's missing shots. Like you said, he has been just getting stopped, like schematically, like, you know, wall off the paint or foul Ben in this instance, right? Like, I think that this Hawks series was like an anomaly in how bad it was, but yeah. It shouldn't distract from the fact that he has just been worse in general in the playoffs. And he was worse, far worse this season than last season, like much worse. Like,
well, and what makes this also crazy is that it's all rooted in a refusal to do something, you know, like that's, The crazy thing about it is that like he's such a strange basketball player in like the most basic sense that like his lack of development and the issues he runs into are almost always circling back around to a refusal to shoot the basketball. You had a point about whether or not you think that Ben was a disappointing draft pick. Is that how you would phrase it?
Yeah, I think that It's an interesting debate that maybe, I mean, we can always circle back to this another time, like after a trade is made, because it might be really interesting to look at it then.
Yeah.
That but in general, I think that, you know, the basically the debate is, I don't think anyone would say that, you know, even for like Ben Simmons has kind of been disappointing in that we had high expectations, right? But like ignoring that, right? Like just like say for a number one pick, right? In general, if you didn't have all these high expectations that didn't really come to fruition, is he a disappointment as a player? I would say no, right? Like he's been an all-star a few times. He's still really young. He's clearly, you know, somewhere in the, like the 25 to 35 range in the league, which isn't like a disaster for your first pick. My argument is that he was a disappointing pick for the Sixers in that, not that they like should have taken someone else or that like there's like other guys better. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is this is a draft disappointment because no one is making the number one pick saying, I hope we get four really good seasons out of this guy. when you use the number one pick in the draft, you're hoping to get like 10, 15 seats.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't. And it's, and you know, the exception would be like, if, you know, somehow he was like a key piece on a team that went super deep in the playoffs and then something happened and we lost him. But it's like, oh, at least we were like really contending during his time here, which also didn't happen, which isn't even to say it's his fault, but like the idea that it's not a disappointment to draft a guy you only get four seasons out of with the number one pick, as good as those seasons were, they were, I mean, especially his early seasons were like incredibly good for someone that young. I don't see how that's not a disappointment. And you know, you could debate, especially, you know, if you trade him for Harden a year ago, then of course it's not a disappointment because you got James Harden and you traded him on your own terms. But now that we're at the point where the number one overall pick after only playing four seasons for us is holding out, demanding a trade. And according to all reports, his value is at an all time low. We're going to be trading him at a low. That's just a draft disappointment. That's not what you want from the first overall pick. It's not about him as a player. I don't think he's a disappointment as a player for the number one pick. He's a disappointing draft pick from a Sixers perspective. That's where I'm at. You guys can disagree if you want.
Emily, what do you think?
That because of how few years we got, it's disappointing.
What do you think, Emily?
I agree. And then, like, I disagree. Because I think, being, you know, a Philadelphia fan, anything that doesn't culminate in a title is kind of disappointing at this point. Like we have, you know, on paper for the past 3 years, there's been magazine covers and is this the year? And, you know, the Sixers just have to put the pieces together and the Sixers never put the pieces together. Like I would say that Markel Fultz was a more disappointing number one draft pick because it happened later and he was gone earlier.
Well, I definitely agree with that.
And chances are we're going to get less in return for Markel than we will for Ben. So like, this isn't the first time this has happened to the Sixers. And it kind of goes back to like when I was not off the Ben train completely. Like you want these guys that you draft and you bring up in your system and they're your guys, you want them to turn out well. So when that doesn't happen, it sucks. And it's just disappointing in general. And that has almost nothing to do with Ben's play more than you just want to see the guys that you grow here and that have been here do well and want to be here. And I think that is almost for me more painful. It's like I want people to want to play here. I love it here. I love this team, and I don't know why everyone doesn't want to play here.
yeah I think we're definitely going to talk more about this when, for the love of God, the trade happens. But I, yeah, because I think on face value when people hear statements like that, they're like, he's not a bust. Like you're making him sound,
he's
like
not he's a bust, he's not a disappointing player. Not the argument.
So that, I think that's the distinction. There's no doubt, I think, that if the Sixers at the time were told this is how it's going to end, they would be disappointed because it's ending in the worst way. And again, like I said before, it's ending this way because he has refused to develop in a few very basic and like possible ways. But yeah, and like Emily just said, like him clearly wanting to leave at this point, it sucks. You know, you draft a guy that high, and part of it is supposed to be that, okay, we've got him for 8 years, he's just best player in the draft. Like, you know, it's a bummer. Speaking of bummer, no more Ben talk, I think, unless somebody tweeted us about it. We are going to, we're going to have a break here. This is going to be an ad break. And then after the break, we're going to talk about your tweet that you sent us to talk about. And then we're going to talk about the Eagles. So here's the break. What a break. Dan, do you have the tweet at the ready right now, or should we vamp?
No, so I haven't pulled up. There's just a few. Basically, we asked on Twitter who we should have on as future podcast guests. We got some good suggestions. Yes. Someone said they have some hot takes. So I said, send us your hot takes. We'll talk about them. So this person sent us three. And someone else sent us one. We can run through them, see what you think. We'll start with the person who sent one, I guess. So this is from at TK76 underscore on Twitter. Maxey is great, but he is a scoring guard, and his lack of point guard skills is going to hold the team back this year in the absence of Ben or another legit starter-level point guard. The team will need to pair him with another higher-level creator for the team to function smoothly.
Emily, your reaction.
I mean, I think it's kind of, I don't disagree, but I think it's partly because Maxey's young. I think he could develop into that, but like we've seen that, like that's the kind of player the Sixers have wanted, like a high level scoring guard. I wouldn't say that there's no way that Maxey ever becomes that, but he's like 20. He's like a baby. So like give him some time, but I don't disagree with the take.
I have like a sort of inherent belief in Maxey at this point. I think Summer League was great. And the flashes we saw last year were really great. I don't think that this person is wrong. When he said that his deficiencies as a point guard would like hinder the Sixers, I would think the exact same thing about Ben. So I'd rather have a new set of them. And I think Maxey's upside is high. I do think that what the Sixers are light on certainly is like perimeter creation, but I'm excited to see Maxey get a shot because I think it could be really good.
Yeah, I in general agree with this statement. I do think that Maxey, has gotten better pretty quickly. I think a big reason the Sixers, generally have been worse when Ben is not playing is because they don't have another player on the team who can pass the ball at a high level. It's not that Ben is a very good passer, don't get me wrong. Ben is a very good passer. But I think because of how weird this team has always been built, we kind of overrate that a bit. Like I think that impact can be overrated because there's no one else who passes at all. Like there's no one on this team who can do that. Shake doesn't do it that well. Maxey hasn't really done it. And I don't even know what George Hill was doing this year. So there's only I agree that the Sixers need just like normal point guards. They do. I don't think they have it right now, but I also don't think that this roster is anywhere close to being what it will be, maybe not for the start of the season. I don't know when the bench trade is going to happen, but that's, we're going to be getting a huge piece back or a couple really important pieces. So I don't think we're anywhere close to what this team would look like. I agree that if you go into the season where Ben is holding out and you haven't made a trade, then Maxey isn't very good at some of the things that Ben does well, and the Sixers don't really have anyone else to do it. But like you're talking about like a player you can get on the MLE that the Sixers just happen to not have. Like this isn't like when we were talking about like, oh, we need Harden, and like no one has that skill set except for like three players in the league, right? Like this isn't some like, hard to come across thing, like elite perimeter creation or elite three level creation. Like this is a pretty normal thing that the Sixers have just never had. There are teams with like two guys that do this, like a starter and a bench player that like play every night and do this full time. And the Sixers have only had Ben to do this for a long time. I don't think that should mean that it's super hard to find. And I think that'll be a priority to find, especially with Ben not there at all. So I agree that like that would be a weakness. I just think that can be addressed. And our next few are from Ash Kwang. I hope I'm saying that right. Ashkweng on Twitter. So kind of a Ben one, but not really. It's about trades. A Buddy Hield, Davion Mitchell, and picks trade is the best trade for the win now Sixers. Hield is an elite shooter on a team-friendly contract. Davion Mitchell is an elite on-ball defender with all defense upside and shot damn near 45% from beyond the arc. Let me say this now. Really don't want Buddy Hield. If we get a ton of picks, I would do almost anything for a ton of picks. If we're keeping ourselves in position for a star, not interested in Buddy Hield unless you're getting like Fox or Halliburton. Really a ton of picks, I don't think I would want Hield and Mitchell, but you guys can tell me what you think.
Yeah, the only thing that he does well, he does really well and would be really, really helpful next to Embiid, but he's just so bad at the other things that he can't be the center of a Ben trade. I would take him, especially for salary, if you're getting Halliburton or something, and the picks would help, but I would not be excited about him as a centerpiece in a Ben trade.
Emma. Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't be excited with him as a centerpiece, but that being said, I was like obsessed with Buddy Hield when they made that run in the tournament, in the NCAA tournament. I was like, loved Buddy Hield. So I would like to have him as a Sixer for that piece, just because I think he seems like a nice guy. I don't watch a lot of Sacramento Kings games though, so I can't really even comment that much on his like current development, because I tend to not watch the Kings very often.
What else we got?
Here's our last one. This is from the same person as our last one. We have TJ McConnell is overrated. He's a spunky player that can create turnovers, but he has no real impact as a scorer or distributor on the offensive end. The amount of times I've seen TJ get to the rim, then kick to the corner for an empty possession is egregious. Ben did the exact same thing in the playoffs last year and is getting heckled for it. Give TJ that same energy.
TJ would be happy to have that same energy if TJ got the paycheck that Ben Simmons got. I'll say that right now.
Yeah, the fact that you can compare Ben to TJ at all offensively is like pretty enormous indictment of Ben. Like, I don't think anyone is, I mean, TJ, I guess, is somewhat a shooter in that he'll like get to the, like run around the back of the basket and like shoot from the baseline or like hook over to the elbow and shoot. But that kind of like, I think that like, I don't know if like the purpose of this tweet is to like, I'm assuming it's to like, you know, put down TJ a bit, which like fine. I don't think any, like, I don't even know what to say. Like
TJ caught a stray here on the podcast.
Like TJ is just obviously, first of all, worse than Ben, right? Like goes without saying. And like, I guess maybe he's overrated, but like to say he's overrated and then compare him to Ben is almost like it almost seems to build him up to compare him to Ben. I don't know. Ben's clearly a better player, but like, and the thing
who's
is,
who's overrating
Ben,
TJ? Who's,
no, like Ben is
House of Highlights posting TJ highlights. Like who's overrating
Ben,
TJ?
Ben doesn't have a TJ role or a TJ salary. like Ben is the lead initiator on like a contending team. Like no one is mistaking TJ for that. TJ is like I guess he started a bit this year, but like in I think anyone's mind he's like an off the bench like hustle for like,
energy
guy.
Yeah.
He's like our Maxi. That's what Maxi did. He was like come off the bench and like get people going. Like that was what TJ does.
TJ is like basically not, like he had a good year, right? But like he's basically the steal the inbounds pass guy. And so for like to compare his offensive output to Ben is just making me more mad at Ben. Like this you shouldn't be.
Now we're back at the beginning.
To do. Like if Ben was playing how he played and passing up those layups and missing those foul shots, but was making like $8 million a year, I'd be able to stomach it a lot more. Like I'd be like, wow, he really played bad, but it wouldn't be like one of our stars like completely let us down. We'd have a whole extra star on the team because we'd have a lot more cap space. So like, I don't know. I just think that they can't be criticized for the same thing because they're just very different and take on very different roles. And that, I don't know. I don't like, I struggle with that one, to be honest. I do.
Those were fun.
I will say this. First of all, thank you for sending it. And second of all, he did say hot take. So you don't have to agree with everyone's hot take, right? They're hot takes for a reason. I don't think he's implying that everyone should be believing this. I think that this is, you know, this is truly a hot take. And I respect, a lot of people say hot take and say something everyone agree with. So right. I respect that he said hot take and went with a hot take. So thank you. I respect it.
We welcome it. We started these off with some scorchers. We had the stuff about the shampoo in the hair. It was a big take podcast. A lot of people are probably at home thinking this fucking idiot forgot to tell Emily to tell the story about the bark in the park. Well, guess what? No, I didn't. Chekhov's gun, very similar situation. Emily, please now take the floor. Tell us about bark in the park at Citizens Bank Park.
I think people are going to think that there is like a very exciting story about my time at bark in the park. And there isn't. It's literally like, we took Luna, our dog, to the Phillies game for bark in the park.
It's gonna be the title of the episode. Emily goes to bark in the park.
and something wild happens. Like, you ever see those like Facebook ads? Like, you'll never believe what happens next in this video. Right. Like, that's this, but
you'll never believe number six.
Yeah, exactly. And then like you get to five and number six is like a virus on your computer. But yeah, we went to bark in the park. We got on the Jumbotron. Luna had a helmet Sunday, which she really enjoyed.
Wow.
We almost got a picture with the Fanatic, but there were a lot of other dogs around and Luna was more interested in the other dogs than the Fanatic. This is her second trip to bark in the park and we thought she was going to be really bad. But we just think that she realized that it was a really special occasion that she didn't want to screw up her chances of getting to go again. So she was really well behaved. She ate a lot of French fries and probably gained like 12 pounds. And we stayed the whole game and she was a real angel and the Phillies blew a lead. Shocking. Great. While we were there. It was, you know, two outs, two strikes, just one more pitch. Let's go. You got it. And I think it was Thursday. Home run. Next pitch. Home run. Phillies lose. It was miserable. And all the people were booing. And then the dogs were barking and like booing. And that was really great. I was like, this is Philadelphia right here.
That's amazing. Well,
you aren't going to want to play here because the dogs bark when they play bad. It's not enough support.
Finally, we're all wearing green attire right now. The Eagles played today. First game of the Nick Sirianni era. Jalen Hurts. They killed it. They were great. They won, I think, 32 to 6. I loved it. I had a great time watching them and I am very excited. You know, I felt excited about the season, just not that they're going to win the Super Bowl, but just that there's a lot of young, fun guys on the team right now that I'm excited to watch. So this was a lot of fun. Emily, what did you think of the Birds game?
Yeah, the game was really fun. I saw something on Twitter and I didn't fact check it, but like the Eagles didn't score more than 30 points at any time in last season. And they did today. So that was fun.
Wow.
It was really fun to see Devontae Smith get in the end zone and like really make an impact on the game. I'll have to say in classic my dad fashion, when Jalen Hurts missed Zach Ertz on that like play early in the game, I got a Hurts sucks text message. So that's classic. Great. My dad first mistake. He's done with them. He wants like Gardner Minshew and I don't know what he wants, but he probably came around by the end. I got to go Birds at the end of the game. So he came around. But yeah, it was a fun game. It just, the Eagles really just like had their foot on the pedal and kind of steamrolled the whole way. There was really no drama to it very much. They just kind of took it and ran and it was great.
Quickly, I'll give you, I didn't watch the game with my parents. I'm in New York. They live in Philly. And my dad doesn't know how to text, but if he was with me, whenever there is a penalty that's called on the Eagles, he'll go, "That's coaching. That's great. I love it. Everyone, that's coaching. It's great." Dan, what did you think of the Eagles game today?
Yeah, you know, coming in, I was definitely pretty excited. I think, you know, Brandon Lee Gowton on our pod got me excited, saying he believes in the team. You know, last year was awful, 4-11-1, really hard to watch. And then, you know, I didn't really know how to feel about Jalen Hurts coming in. I thought that he had some moments last year, but also, you know, there were times his arm just didn't look, you know, like a top half NFL talent, like maybe, you know, a guy who can be, you know, starter level, but not high end starter level, like you need to win. But I thought he was super impressive today. Like, obviously it was just the Falcons who are awful, but you know, he made plays, he made good throws. He didn't get sacked 8 times like Carson does every time. I'm all in now. I see no reason not to be all in. Jalen, first of all, really handsome guy.
Very.
He's super. He's fun to watch. He's a fun quarterback. He played great.
He's got quite a body on him too, if I can just guess right the jar. I'm just saying, he's got it all put together.
Yeah, he's definitely, he looks great. He was fun to watch. A lot of the young, you know, receivers looked really good. Mailata looked good. The defense looked a little shaky at the beginning, but didn't break, and then was phenomenal the rest of the game. I'm pretty sure we're winning the Super Bowl because it's all coming together. And Hurts is the real deal. Love it. Let's do it.
Great. Eagles are 1-0. Ben Simmons is still a Sixer. This is it. We've gotten to the end of the podcast. I have to say, I don't know where you're listening to this right now. You're either listening to this on our new feed, the Gastroenteritis Blues, or you're listening to this on the Liberty Bowlers feed. Whichever one you're listening on, we appreciate it. I do want to say from us, thank you so much to the people who listened to our first exclusive episode on the other feed. We really appreciate it. It's incredibly cool that you guys listen and came over with us there. And so subscribe to that feed. We're going to have more shows coming up. We'll do a midweek one every week. And anytime anything happens that warrants an emergency podcast, we'll do one there. This week, we're going to talk to Alonzo Jones of Twitter, of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast fame. He writes a newsletter for them. Tweets by Zoe. We love him and he'll be a really fun guest. So we're going to talk to him on Wednesday. If you are down on your luck and for some reason want to intern for this podcast, please reach out to us. We'd love to talk about it. And I think that is it. Does anybody else have anything to say here, you guys?
I'm proud of us for talking that long when nothing happened.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Emily?
If anyone... I've recently gotten into Formula One. So if anyone wants to tweet about Formula One with me, I would really like it because I'm the only person I know who watches Formula One and I would like to talk about it with someone.
And where can they tweet at you to do that?
At Third and Girl with underscores on both sides of the and.
See, I love it. Oh, we have to talk about you and Zoe both have like sort of pun centric Twitter handles that we'll have to talk about.
Do you just mean they have underscores in them?
No, I don't.
He meant that it's not your name.
Oh, it's not my name. Well, Zoe is like, well, when you Zoe said his full name, I was like, who? And then I was like, oh,
yeah, God, I know. Okay. But his, I think, is a Beats by Dre reference. I think that I heard him say that once, that tweets by Zoe.
That's good. Mine isn't that clever.
We'll find out. We're going to have the exclusive on Wednesday.
There we go.
Good seeing you guys. Go Birds.
Trey they should Benson. Have put us in the Eagles hype video or whatever with the Go Birds one. We could have just been like, Go Birds. It would have been great.
Right? We could have been at that cafe with the barista.
I figured out what it was, too.
What do you mean?
It's Cafe Lift in Spring Garden. That's where they filmed it.
Oh,
I've been there.
It's
that's
a delight.
Like, that's like two blocks, maybe less from me.
Yeah.
They have a great lemon ricotta pancake.
They do right have now. A great lemon ricotta pancake. It's a delightful brunch spot.
They have a they have a cheesesteak, egg and cheese on a pretzel bun thing. Delicious.
Oh my own. Wow.
Next time we're all together, we'll go to Cafe Lift.
Perfect.
I super down. I'll come whenever you guys are ready. All right. Be safe. Be great. We love you. Goodbye. See ya.
Bye.
Oh yeah, baby, I love you.